What's going on, everybody, and welcome to the Ask a CISP podcast. So this is a weekly episode to the other side of the firewall, where we talk about the latest and greatest in cybersecurity news, as well as we highlight those movers and shakers and glass ceiling breakers, those people of color who made it to the other side of the proverbial firewall. With me this week is Michael Ware. So he is a friend of the podcast. You've been on, we talked about it three or four times, right? You've been on the environmental justice and expanding broadband episode, the debt ceiling agreement, North Korean hacker, impersonating journalists, as well as workplace diversity and inclusion. So glad to have you back on the show. This is your first Ask a CISP, so I'm pretty excited about it. But I definitely wanted to give you the time because you've been very supportive of the show. You actually engage with us a lot. And when I ask for feedback, you always provide feedback. And I just wanted to give you your do your introduction, your background, and all that good stuff. Your cybersecurity origin story, and then what you're currently doing. With all that being said, I definitely have to plug, please like, share, subscribe. We're on all the platforms that you listen to audio on, to include now YouTube, which we've been getting great results. And leave us some feedback. Like, watch us, listen to us, read the articles that are now on LinkedIn. So we're hitting all the senses. But without further ado, I give it to Michael.
Hey, thanks, Ryan. Happy to be here, daily listener. Okay, I'm Mike Ware. Right now, I am the CIO for the Department of Environmental Quality for the state of North Carolina. So I was in the military for 24 years. First 10 years, I did aircraft maintenance on the B-1 bomber. So we did defensive avionics. So if you've heard of that term, jamming radar, I worked on the parts that did that. And then during that time, I got my bachelor's degree. And the Air Force, you know, it was just before 2000, where just before the dot-com bubble, and a whole bunch of officers got out. So they had a dip, and they needed to assess a whole bunch more officers. So they had this one-year ROTC program. If you already have your bachelor's degree, you can jump in and get commissioned the next year. So, you know, I took advantage of that. So I commissioned at the 10-year mark. And the next 14 years, I was a comms officer, which is Air Force speak for IT. And my last assignment, which I think was the assignment that we were with together, was the director of operations at the 83rd.
Yes.
Operations Squadron.
Yep. You're both Shannon and my boss.
Yes.
Very small world.
And so there we ran operations for the Air Force from what, Missouri to Turkey, something like that.
Yeah.
And so then I retired, went to North Carolina. I got a job for 30 days as a contractor for the Department of Transportation as a security contractor.
Okay.
And I just did that for 30 days. I wrote some policy about phishing and some training. But I had applied for a bunch of jobs, and then I got picked up as a CIO for the Department of Information Technology. And from there, we had some optimization going on where they're combining some of the IT classifications and jobs in the state. And so I got assigned to the Department of Environmental Quality, and it's kind of been there since 2016.
Got it. And that's pretty much where we picked back up. I can't remember how we connected again, whether it was through LinkedIn or what have you. I don't know if you saw the show first or reached out to you first.
No, I saw the show.
Okay. Yeah, it's a small world. Yeah, I saw your name pop up, and I was like, oh, man, I know a Mike Ware. Like, where did I know him from? I was like, oh, yeah. So it's really cool stuff, so I had to have you on the show. But it's interesting. So I did not know about the B-1 stuff. So I knew you were previously enlisted, but I thought it was IT. I didn't know it was in aircraft. So just like Shannon. Shannon was also on aircraft. I think he was – I'm going to get it wrong. He's going to kill me. I think he worked on 15s.
I believe that we talked about that, and I think he was Avion for fighters, so I think it was the F-15.
Okay, I didn't know. So what's really crazy is, like, of course, everybody knows I was in the Air Force. I know so little about airframes, it makes no sense. Like, I've been on several of them. I'm like, what is this again? What am I on? I know so little, it's ridiculous. People ask me what I flew when I was in the Air Force. And I always say a desk. They start laughing. They're like, I've never heard it before. I'm like, well, it's an old joke.
Yeah, I say I was an officer, a lot of people are like, oh, you're a pilot? I'm like, nope.
No, that's awesome. So, no, I did not know that was your journey. So that's pretty cool. I actually learned something new. What was that change like going from working on airframes, being on the flight line to jumping into communications?
So I was 30. 30 years old.
Okay.
So it made it a little bit easier for the
trend. Oh, gotcha.
I got a lot of credibility for being enlisted. So when I could explain to airmen how they get promoted,
right,
better than they could understand it, right? You know, doing that kind of work. But it was also difficult. So we were very tight in the maintenance crew. And so, you know, we would hang out a lot, and it's a little bit lonelier on the officer side. A lot of the, you know, you hang out with other officers, but not too five.
Right.
So, anyway, it was different. The tech part, though, was pretty easy, only because, I mean, I went to, they sent me so much school.
Gotcha.
So it was the hands-on piece that I would always miss. So, like, I understand the theoretical. I theoretically understand what you're doing, but I couldn't do it.
Right, right.
So
that makes sense. At least you came from something adjacent, though. Because I remember, I didn't have a lot of bad officers, quote-unquote. Like, maybe just one or two, but it was never due to their lack of knowledge of what we're doing. It was more like their soft skills, right? You're just like, you're in a management position, right? You have to know how to speak to people. But I was always, it always surprised me. Like, I would have a boss that was like a biology major or a psychology major. And, you know, the military doesn't necessarily care about what your major was to a certain extent. Like, if you're going for something very specific, where they need, you know, an architect, a doctor, a nurse, you know, something to that extent. But it was the being able to apply whatever they had and then obviously understand how to manage people. Like, you can manage anything as long as you understand people. And then, you know, you dig in enough, like you said, you know, the theory of how it works, don't necessarily have to put your hands on it. So that always blew my mind, though, because I would talk to, you know, someone who was my boss, and I'd find out that their degree was in something totally, like, 180 degrees different than what we did. I often found it to be more, not necessarily frustrating, but it used to be more of a challenge if they were coming from an engineering or a technical background. Like, one of my hardest commanders to please, he was an engineer, right? So computer science was nothing to him. So you couldn't, basically you couldn't pull a wool over his eyes. Like, if I didn't have an answer, I worked for the CFP, right? We don't always have the answer. He would want to answer immediately, and I just, like, try to BS him. He'd be like, no, that's not the way that works. I'm going to need you to go find me a real answer.
Yeah, it's a tough one. So, the common focal point. I haven't heard that in a while.
Oh, yeah.
Right, so, I think that's a balancing act, because your boss has to report something to his boss.
Right.
Right, so there's always going to be a relationship there that you may not know. You may not know what's on the other side, and maybe he is tracking down details for his boss, or maybe, you know, for himself or herself. I found that whenever I did that, it only marginally helped.
Mm-hmm. I see.
I spent more of your time and my time trying to find this. Small detail when a lot of times it doesn't matter. It really, truly doesn't matter. It's like, when are you going to be done?
When are we going to be back up?
When are we going to be back up? And then after that, why did we go down? And can we prevent that from happening again? Right. But that's after the fact. And in every situation is unique. But, you know, in my experience, even in this job, you know, when I started digging into the details, at my level, it's only a marginal improvement, because no one I'm talking to, especially now, is going to understand a word I say about the tech IT. I need to convert that over to words that they understand.
And that makes sense. And that, I guess that goes right back into those soft skills, for knowing how to manage those expectations of your leadership, and then giving the people who are doing the work kind of a break. But what I will say, though, is it used to frustrate me as an airman, trying to find that minute detail when I should be troubleshooting the whatever's broken. But you learn how to CYA like nobody's business. So my first time out in the corporate sector, I was asked to hunt down, like, why something went awry. The customer was upset because they're paying money. So they're like, why is this broken? And I gave them the most detailed report possible. Like, this, here's some timestamps, this is what happened, this is who I talked to. And I gave it to my boss, and he was like, this is a lot. Can you make it smaller. Like, well, in the military, this would not be enough. They were like, well, right. They would find the gaps, right? They were like, well, what about here? What were you doing during this second? So I found that to be comical. But so now we've gone over your background, your experience. Again, I've learned some stuff as well. There was another point that I wanted to bring up. So you talked about, the Department of Transportation, so the DOT. Was that kind of your foot in the door to your current job? Are those departments speak to one another? Is there basically a bridge or a path between those, or happenstance?
No, that was just coincidence.
Got it.
I think I did a pretty good job on putting my resume on what I did in the military. But one of the things that, like, the last couple of jobs I did, I didn't handle money directly. There was a separate function. They're like, this is how much money you have. Okay. I can spend
right.
that, right? But, and that was like, so any private job, I remember the first interview I had, I bombed because they were talking about budget forecast and things like that. And I'm like, I can speak the language, but I had no practical experience. So that was a little frustrating. So the public sector job the public sector jobs were just a lot easier. I just related to them much more. And also they had the same application. So we did something that most people don't, is we left somewhere. We didn't, my wife's family was in Ohio. Mine was in Missouri, neither place we wanted to go to. And, so we chose North Carolina. There was a lot of tech jobs, a lot of good schools and colleges. So we came out here without anything set up, just my retirement. So I just applied for a bunch of jobs. And so that journey that you hear about when you get out and you're looking for jobs where they're like, oh, you're going to apply for 50 jobs. I applied right. for like 75 jobs. And the first one I bombed. And of course, I took that interview while we were in a hotel.
Oh, okay. Yeah, you're right in the middle of the transition.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. We had a hamster in the bathtub. That's how tight we were. And so I got my resume laid out on the bed. And I'm trying to, and he throws me all these questions that I did not prepare for this question.
Right.
Then the next interview I got with American Tower. And it could have been a completely different story because me and that guy clicked. Holy cow. He was like, yeah, I'm going to run a floor. I'm going to run under the towers, have her up. And he's like, yeah.
Right.
And then he called me back and he walked me out and was talking to me in front of the two other people that are waiting for the next interview.
Wow. So you had the wink and the gun. Yeah.
It wasn't as big as the floor of the NOS. Like, it was like, right? And he called me and said, we have to push this to next quarter, but I'll call you when that happens. I'm like, okay. So then I got the DOT contractor job, and I also applied for the other job. So those kind of like lined up. And then he did. He called me the quarter, but I was making more. I think looking back, I might have had a higher ceiling if I was on American Tower.
That's what you're saying, right.
Or not, or I could have got fired. Who knows?
Right. So it's not really necessarily a transition episode, but whenever anyone who's transitioned out of the military, I always like to ask them questions about their specific transition, because it's different for all of us. Like,
yeah,
everybody's going to have a different path when they leave. Some of us will have an easier time. Some of us have a harder time. I was in the same boat. I applied for 52 jobs. 52 jobs, only 5 callbacks and only 2 interviews out of that. It's just, they don't prepare you for that. Like, when you're transitioning, because of all the certifications and the degrees and just all the things they teach you leaving, you're going to be just fine. But not knowing that the market doesn't necessarily always care about that, right? Like, they do to a certain extent, but they play the game differently. So you definitely were speaking to me when you were saying, like, you're trying to figure out, like, going through your resume, figuring out what you're trying to say. Like, they prepare you. Like, I'm not trying to say that TAP isn't a transition assistance program. Coming out of the military isn't good. It's great. However, I wish there was more of a kind of like when you do Hiring Our Heroes or 4-Block and things of that nature, those skill bridges. I wish they would kind of integrate a little bit more of that while you're on active duty. Because you're already on the job hunt when you're on SkillBridge, and then you're learning all the stuff you're doing wrong as you're doing it wrong, as opposed to, hey, how do I function as a civilian? Even no matter how long your enlistment was, 4 years to 40 years, like it's going to be, you know, different for everybody transitioning. So, no, thank you for sharing that. Because, yeah, a lot of people are unfortunately under a misassumption that, oh, yeah, I'm just going to step out. You may just step out the door and land a job. But depending on what the market looks like when you get out, like there could be a million other people with similar skills.
There's timing, and there's so many forces that you don't know. And I've seen so many people, you know, leave active duty, walk right back into a civilian job. And for me, that wasn't happening. I looked around and there wasn't anyone there. And it's timing. So maybe we are looking for jobs. It's just like the military, right? So there's a numbers game. How many people do we need today?
Right.
And next quarter, we may not need that many.
Right. And then the market is full of people who are seeking a job, right? So it's in their favor. Like, he can wait a quarter and say, okay, we can push it off. If you're not available, somebody else will be on the hunt.
Yeah.
There's no, like in the military, you have to slot people. Manning is a whole dynamic in itself when it comes to putting the right people in the right places. And even then, you still have shortfalls. There's not really a surplus of soldiers, airmen, sailors, things of that nature, Marines. So this is interesting dynamic, but you also brought up a key point of there is a difference between in the military, you have to spend the money. Like, you're praised about how you spend the money. How much did you spend? How quickly did you spend it? Did we meet our milestones, etc.? What I learned quickly on the outside is, how much money did you save us? Like, how efficient are you in not spending this money? Because we don't want to spend all of our money this quarter, which is the exact opposite.
Yes. So, yeah. In the military and still in the state, your next year's budget is, you know, if you didn't spend all this year's budget, you must not need it all. And very much so in the military. I think we had talked about this on one of our other podcasts and saying, this is why sometimes people have really nice desks and chairs, but everything else is falling apart, is because
right.
At the end of the year, what can you spend money that you can get quickly? You can buy desks and chairs. Like,
yep.
The next day, so you can spend that money. You can't pay this contract for a new computer solution or anything that requires construction or, you know, any of those things. Those take too long. So it's a whole different thing. But yeah, in the private sector, it's I think Chan has talked about security, especially, is not a revenue center, right?
You're a cost, which. To a certain extent, so is insurance. Like, no one wants to pay for insurance, but you need it. Sometimes you're mandated to have it. I think the same thing is kind of where cybersecurity is starting to head with all of the regulation and what have you, which I believe is necessary because you have to protect people and their information. But at any time that a company can cut costs, that's what they look at. They look at cybersecurity and they look at diversity, equity, and inclusion. So, and I would like to kind of maybe pivot in that direction. So we've had you on the show to talk about DE&I in the past. You're definitely a champion of it, and we greatly appreciate that. And there was a movement. There was a wave. It felt good out there in the private sector when I was leaving the military, especially, where DE&I was very big, very necessary. But it seems to be that's where the budgets are being cut now. Like, what are you seeing on your side when it comes to diversity, equity, and inclusion?
There's actually some state law that got pushed out. So you got to be careful on how we talk about DE&I. And I think there's a really, from my point of view, there's a poor perception of it. And it's looked at something like it's something different, like it's meant to be a quota thing. And there's a couple other states that have laws in the books that state agencies can't. So they're not saying you can't have a DE&I program, but they use very words that are so close that our agency had a long discussion on, oh, what are we going to rename it?
Gotcha. Right.
So it became a tough slope. But what I can tell you is that, so the first time I was on this podcast, I was talking about hiring and trying to get more people to apply for jobs. and either you or Shannon, you know, was talking about the hashtags. And I actually got my agency to actually put together like a guide on when to use hashtags and ideas on how to do that. So I don't think it's used a lot, but it's out there.
Right.
And we're looking at NCDIT for North Carolina has internship programs that are focused on historically black colleges and universities, HBCUs, right. And a couple other internships focused on minorities and also neurodiverse or neural atypical. So people.
Oh, that's awesome. Yeah, I'm starting to hear and see a lot more of that as well, right?
Yeah.
Not just diversity of ethnicity and culture, but also have different ways of thinking, different ways of interpreting information, different ways of going about doing work and things of that nature, depending upon their capabilities or their specialties of some sort. So,
yeah. So that's what I'm seeing. I'm on the DE&I committee for DIT, and okay. So we meet once a quarter and you know have discussions, and there's some groups that do some things. So I think we'd like to do more. I think there's a little pause right now on because of that law. So that's unfortunate. It's unfortunate that we got to stop and really think about and try to be careful to not get in trouble. Because if we promote something, and the words are very specific in the law that if we promote one race is inherently better than another, we can get in trouble, like fired in trouble. So
right. Gotcha. So it seems as though, and not to put words in your mouth, but it's kind of like the I always talk about the pendulum swinging, DE&I becoming kind of a touchstone over the past couple of years and trying to get more people, you know, cultural, ethnic diversity within certain sectors of government, things of that nature, has made people feel like they're being excluded from doing it as well. So like we've seen recently the affirmative action being overturned and things of that nature. So it's a touchy subject, and there's legislation coming out, like you said, that's very specifically worded in order to, depending on your side of the conversation, either protect, you know, make sure everyone has equal access, or, you know, be a roadblock to, I guess, progress to a certain extent, just depending on what side of you know the table you're on, aisle or what have you. So it's not, we're not a political show, so I don't really dig too deep, right?
One thing that I like though in that committee is just learning new things. As we had a little segment on the neurodiverse, the people on the autism spectrum, basically saying, you know, they don't get different points of inflection in a sentence, and so
got it,
they'll miss that completely. And then sometimes people might feel like they're annoying because at one point you might have said, I like Pokemon. And they're like, I like Pokemon. And every time they see you, they will ask you about Pokemon because that's what they know. You,
right.
You're
associated with it. Pokemon, yeah.
It's right there. They're going to say that every single time. Not getting any kind of cue that you're like, okay, we talked about that. There's nothing new.
Right.
So, but understanding that, but also, you know, also hitting on what they're very good at is pattern matching and right. All sorts of, you know, data and analysis. Those are just examples. Try not to be stereotypical, but that was very interesting. And then in that, and I think, I don't remember if I brought it up with you all, but I do like to play D&D.
Right, we have talked about it, or at least in passing, I think we've talked about it.
Yeah, so where they talk about in D&D, you say half elf, right? So the implied other half is human. So then when you say someone's half black, the implied other half is what?
Right. Like,
right? And I never thought of that. Never crossed my mind before that. So that was a very interesting conversation, just at least being cognizant of how those, you know, words matter and how those kind of things happen. Anyway, but I found that interesting and helpful. And also to hear other people's perspective. We talk about diversity, strengthen the diverse thoughts and
right.
backgrounds. And yeah, so in that committee, you see it. And so anyway, I think there's a place for it. I think we're stronger for it. I just think it's, you know, once it starts to bend into politics, then it's unfortunate that as soon as something becomes a political topic, it seems like, so we'll get people to yell at me for this. It seems like people lose their reason. They're like, once it hits a political topic, it's like, oh, I must think this way because this is how my politics are changing.
And just, it's a team sport, unfortunately.
Yeah. You lose your independent thought.
Yeah. Yeah, like, I'm part of this team. I never really got it. I am registered, what is it, independent or unaffiliated or whatever they call it here in Florida. It's not independent in Florida. I think it's unaffiliated or something like that. I'm affiliated with something, but I don't want to give either party my money right now. I want to see who's going to be the candidate when they're talking about things of that nature. But then it also blocks you from being able to be in the primary or to do other things because you haven't picked a team, so now you can't vote. Or who's going to be the candidate for said team. You have to already have picked a side, so to speak. I agree with you.
That's right. In North Carolina, you can pick a side, but once you pick, so I'm independent, so I can vote in a primary. But once I vote in primary, I can't vote in the other.
Mm.
So you kind of commit yourself, which is, it makes sense. So you can't play both sides of the.
It does make sense. Yeah. I don't know. Like, it is pretty crazy. I want to say that it's worse than it's ever been, but I've never been 40, right, before. So, like, my younger mind thinking of how politics work to now, you know, having the experience of it is, it you become very much disenfranchised and apathetic to it, which is unfortunate as you get older. So, and that's who votes. So I'm going to be an 80-year-old, very cranky man. Who's like, back in my day. And you're the one who makes all the decisions. You're the one who sways it. Like, you have more weight, as a constituent than people who you will send to war, which baffles my mind. And I'm right in between the two. So, being my middle age, I guess you should say, it's crazy out there. But no, again, not a political show, but politics does have a big factor when it comes to cybersecurity as well, right? So we talk about the DE&I portion of it and how that has, again, the pendulum swinging depending on, like you said, it could be policy, it could be the state you're in, it could be just that corporations don't see the value in it, or if they do see the value, it's at the edge of their bottom line. So it's like, what can we get rid of to save money? Well, we can get rid of this chunk, right? But then it digs a little bit deeper. So like me and Shannon and even Chris on the show have talked about how companies are starting to get rid of their cybersecurity teams or reduce them, things of that nature. Like the math isn't mathing, so to speak. Like, if cybersecurity is important to you, then how can you cut into that division of your workplace?
Yes, it's so cybersecurity, I feel, is kind of like, okay, we're shooting for the sales to make this quarter goals, right? But if that's all you're doing, you know, you're not thinking long term strategy. Right. So I don't think we had time for this full story, but it's like Kodak, right? Like, oh, we're focused on the sales, the right. Camera, the film, right? All this digital thing, whatever. We'll get around to it, and you don't. And by the time you try to grab onto it, it's, you know, it's passed by.
Right. Speaking of which, because I do want to hit a lot of the topics we've been covering over the past week. So I know we've been focusing on the artificial intelligence kind of topics. So over the past couple of weeks, I've sat down and talked to Ellen Wesley, which you have not seen the episode yet. It'll debut this week on Thursday.
Okay.
He is a DE&I champion. He is big into artificial intelligence. He's invited me to a panel of his where they're talking about kind of the predictions they made last year when it came to artificial intelligence and then where it's currently standing. Which ones did they get right? Which ones did they get wrong? I am completely enamored with it. Like, I was very AI-ist to a certain extent. I didn't want it really meddling with much of my work, just because I didn't quite understand it. And then when I switched the platforms, like, so we moved from Zoom to now we're on Riverside FM. They're not paying me. They should. But with that came a bunch of AI tools. And then I started playing with those, learning how it can make the show notes for me. It can, like, shave off some time. And then talking to Ellen Wesley, I started to go into ChatGPT to the point of now I'm a plus member. I pay them a fee.
There you go.
The best $20 I've ever spent. It's making thumbnails. It's generating quick articles, like taking our transcript. Like, this will become an article. I'll take our transcript, dump it in there. All I got to do is just polish. Just tell it, like, focus on these areas. AI is amazing. It's not selling well with a lot of businesses, especially government and even in the private sector. So when I was a consultant, I was doing a lot of just talking about building their AI policies. And then I built a statement of understanding product for one company. So I was just dipping my toe into it, but their engineers were full tilt. So it's like one hand is saying, hey, pump the brakes. The other one is like, these tools are great. Let's put them in production. So what are your thoughts about what's going currently with the artificial intelligence and how it's ramping up?
Oh, so I love it. I equate basically, you know, imagine you have because my D&D head, right? So you got a battlefield full of knights with swords and shields and stuff, right? And you're just like, you just take a sword from some knight and give him a machine gun. Here you go. It is powerful. I mean, you still need somebody to shoot the gun, but, right. I mean, some of the stuff that comes out of it is like magic. So now, how do we make that productive? From the public side, how do we make it better for the citizens of North Carolina? So, I mean, it saves me time. I've used the console. I got to be careful because our policy right now is to refrain from using generative AI.
Okay.
But, you know, I've written some speeches. I kind of use it as a little joke. I have to make the outlines. And then I just use the opening sentences to kind of structure it. But then I fill it in with whatever topic I'm talking about. But then I'll say the first statement. I'll say, well, that was written by ChatGPT, which is probably not funny now. But last year,
right,
everyone was really laughing at it. So that kind of admin work is great. But I mean, really, at that point, though, it's still kind of novelty. It helps you draft some things.
Right.
I think it can help you with RFPs. And all sorts of things. However, then you have to look at the security, and that's what our state CIO is, you know, concerned about is security for state data. And whatever you put in there goes and teaches the model.
It's great.
And then you have the hallucinations. But I will say that I think I'm one of the first people in the agencies to get official approval to get a ChatGPT license.
Well, that's awesome.
We have this software that's for our marine fisheries, and it's 40-year-old code. It's a non-relational database. If you can even conceive of what that kind of database looks like, it's text-based.
Right.
And it's, you know, I think the record was like 300 lines of continuous code. No breaks, no nothing.
Wow, that's a nightmare.
Trying to decipher it. And the gentleman who, I don't think I can say how old he is, well into his age when he retired. Gotcha. We have to figure this out. And we probably shaved out, I would say, easy 9 months to a year instead of going through each piece of this code, going through Google and all that stuff.
You just
put it in ChatGPT and go right. Now, there's a security problem that you put code into this language model that can teach other things, so someone can conceivably grab that code. But here's the beauty of the paid license, right? You can turn that off. You can turn it where you don't teach the model, so it's not available.
Right? Okay, so it's your instance of...
Yeah.
Oh, no, that's awesome. So I was not tracking that, so it would
there's
be...
There's another level of pro that you can go to.
Ah,
I think it's
okay.
Team. I forget.
So basically, they've pushed you a model, and then it's only learning in your environment.
Well, at least it doesn't.
To a certain extent,
it doesn't.
Right? It's not sharing. It's not sharing what it's. Yeah, to for the larger model. So it's still learning. It's still receiving information from the larger model.
Yes.
But you're not pushing information to it.
Yes.
Okay.
Now, if you were, which I can't do, but I want to. If we were to get our own, so we're having Microsoft, we got into Azure, and of course Microsoft owns OpenAI, we could get our own environment. And in that case, we can choose to learn or not. You only know what's at this URL. So imagine you're making a chatbot. You have the large language model, and you're like, you only know this information here, and you can tune it to say, infer from this knowledge, hallucinate, or not, and you can like kind of adjust that up and down. I don't know if it's buttons. I've not actually seen the console, but
right.
And then you can also say, don't share or share. And so you protect yourself as far as putting that on though. So I think that's the next step that I want to do, because I just want to make a chat box for my help desk, right? And so people can use what looks like ChatGPT and say, how do I change my password, or how do I map a printer? And it will tell them using the large language model in normal words, but only know this information. And of course, you can go beyond that.
That's awesome. So hopefully they do allow you to make that progress. Honestly, from the public sector work that I did do, you are currently light years ahead of what I was seeing when I was out there. Like, they're very hesitant to allow them to do anything with it. And then when they would find out that they were using it, it would be like, hey, pump the brakes. Like, we don't understand this. We don't know how to do it. We want to make sure we have policy. Let me look at someone like me and ask for a policy. It's a little bit harder being a third party, right? I can give you the framework. Here's an outline of what the policy should look like. However, you, company A, you're going to have to put your hands on this, because I don't know what type of data you're ingesting. I don't know I know to a certain extent what regulations you should follow, right? Like, are you going to be this type of business? Then, you know, this would be your framework. But it's a little bit more intimate than that. So that's kudos to your team and your higher ups for making that progress. Because I know a lot of people are being shut down right now. And some of the fear is valid, right? Like, you don't want to share anything that could potentially be used by a bad actor or adversary, things of that nature, especially in the government or federal sector. But they're more afraid of the things that are already being done out in Grammarly, Word. You know, these things are already doing functions such as this, like PowerPoint and what was the other one? Adobe. Like, when you tell them about what Adobe can do,
yeah,
and they're like, "Oh, I didn't know." Like, it's obviously this ChatGPT and all the other LMs are much more powerful than that, but they don't understand to a certain extent like what is already on the market. If your people are already using these things, that's okay. So it's just a matter of figuring out, you know, kind of what's your workflow going to be? What kind of data going to be?
Yes. So I get myself in trouble because I'm very passionate about this. Like, so when we started, all we heard was the horror stories, right? And you're like, oh, what's this happened to this lawyer who used ChatGPT, and it cited it made up cases to cite. Like, I mean, that guy's probably going to lose his license, right? But he shouldn't have done that. Should have checked it. But you hear all these horror stories, and I'm like, well, as far as the privacy stuff goes, Google knows all that. You put all that stuff in Google. No one.
It's very true.
Right? Yeah. You're not going to say, oh, Ryan Williams' social security number, date of birth in Google. You wouldn't do that in Google. So what?
Why would you do that?
Yeah. You wouldn't do it in ChatGPT either. Now, Google can't summarize a resume, and people may want to think, oh, let me summarize this resume, or hey, look at these three resumes and tell me the best person to hire, which
also very unethical.
That. So the temptation would be there, where you wouldn't probably do that in Google, but you can do it here. But to your same point, yeah, I don't want to get into the specific thing I said to during this argument. There's other products that are in the cloud that you do put information in. And we have code repositories that are, you know, the viewers of this podcast centered on security just know all the other easier ways it would to get that information other than trying to pull out code out of ChatGPT that you might have put in.
And I think what I found fascinating was the hallucination piece of it. So I've only been repurposing my own content. Like, I never type in like, hey, make me an article about this, right? No, I take the material we've already created. So we're like, we're going to speak for probably an hour or something like that. I'll take that hour of long transcript and I'll say, hey, make me a run of show. What did we talk about? And it'll break down by chapter and timestamp. Awesome. Especially when it comes to content on YouTube. And that can go a step further. Okay. Now I want you to just focus on these specific chapters and give me the key takeaways. And then now you can use that and repurpose. So for the repurpose, it's great. So I never saw the hallucinations until today, actually. So I, because I've been, I'm doing a very poor job of, I have like 80 million chat. I should be streamlining. I should be consolidating. I'm working on it. But I was trying to build a prompt where it would break down, okay, take my transcript, generate an article with these following topics based upon the chapters. And then I want you to then convert that into a social media post for LinkedIn that entices the audience to listen, you know, read all that other stuff. And then I want you to generate a thumbnail. And I'm trying to build like one solid prompt that just does everything for me. I forgot to put the transcript in, and I hit enter and it starts spitting out information. And I looked at it and I was like, that's kind of what we talked about. I was like, what went wrong? And I looked, and I was like, I didn't put a transcript in it. So it's like thinking like based upon these topics, what could you have possibly been talking about? And it was very close to not have any information. And I was like, that's what they're talking about. It will literally just generate stuff and make it sound coherent. I was like, that could be something I was talking about, but I didn't feed it anything. So it blew my mind. I was like, this tool is too powerful. But it was really cool though. I was like, okay, now I get it. It can really just make up things. If you don't give it enough information, it'll just take the best guess based upon other information and just spit it out. Here you go. So yeah, that was very eye-opening. Very cool, but very eye-opening. Like, okay, I definitely have to always make sure I double check what I put in there to make sure it doesn't say something crazy. But no, that's awesome. Like, again, AI is very fascinating. I'm very slow when it comes to taking off on it. So I've watched hours of YouTube over the past few nights just trying to figure out, like, okay, what's the best way to be more efficient, right? Like, how can I do X, Y, and Z? And then hopefully, you know, this can be adapted because I'm also not using that work. But I saw it in some instances where it could help you generate diagrams and flowcharts for like PowerPoint presentations. I'm like, that's so cool. As opposed to me trying to figure out in Visio, I could feed it enough information to build me the diagram or the Gantt chart or what have you. Like, from PM perspective, this thing is going to be amazing. I cannot wait.
I think so. I had an intern last summer, and just playing around, I was like, I want to know some of the capabilities of AI out there, right? So he pulled in like some stuff that can generate music. The one that was most interesting, though, was we have a travel policy, public policy online, not secret. And right. We're like, make a video of this. And it was so good. It had that's people crazy. In the airport getting ready to get on a plane.
Like when B-roll footage?
Yes.
It's amazing.
And when it was talking about, you know, secure your hotel room and stuff like that, it was right. People in a hotel, in a hotel room. I mean, it was spot on. The only thing I didn't like is it put the words on top of the video. But whatever. It was, and I mean, that was in seconds.
Right. And it's very powerful. And I can't even conceive what the future hold. Like looking at Sora and then all the other, prompt video models that are coming out where they're not even real people. So it's going to be very disruptive. I get that, but this is always the thing about future tech, right? So they're projecting that it'll be very disruptive. A lot of people's side hustles will go away because they can do it. Like that's the best $20 I've ever spent. I don't have to have anybody help me with any of the stuff I hate doing. But it's also saying it will also create upwards of like the projection on the one survey I saw was 93 million new jobs will be created because of AI. Because you'll need people who know how to do something in order to get the AI to do something new, cool, and innovative.
Yeah, you need someone to hold and shoot and get it done.
Right.
But
that's a really good, that's a spot on analogy. When you say you took the sword and gave him a machine gun, yeah.
Because and I think I got a couple years on you, but like when I was coming up, there was a computer person and did everything.
Right.
You fixed your computer and set up the network, you know, and now all of those are separate jobs. So I have no problem believing that it will, you know, spark another right. industry.
Yeah, I also feel that way. Like a lot of people are being very pessimistic about it. We need people who actually do jobs that involve touching things, right? We need more mechanics. We need more plumbers, more, you name it, like things that AI simply just cannot do. It can help you devise a better scheme, a better plan. It can develop the blueprints, but you still need people to have hands-on equipment, right? So that's still always going to be an industry. But two, I'm starting to see a big push for AI project managers, AI this, AI that. So these jobs are starting to spin up. And it is just a matter of pivoting, right, from what I currently do into something that is in line with it. So I think like PMI even has a cert now for PMP-AI of some sort exists now. So I'm very optimistic about it. I'm very hopeful for it. Just in the being helpful. Like if I ever get around to sitting down writing a guide or a book or something like that, best believe it's going to collect my notes. It's going to pull down my transcriptions. It's going to be my copywriter, basically. Yeah. And then I'm still the sculptor, right? I'm still the guy who's chiseled and hammered to the I don't know what you carve, marble. There it is.
There you go.
I'm still gonna be the guy who's doing that, right? I'm making the sculpture, but this thing is a better chisel and hammer. It's the best that's potentially ever created. So,
oh yeah,
I'm very optimistic.
It's well, the other thing to that is you know, we're talking about the not. It's great at number crunching and doing this fantastic analysis that we can never do, right? So there's a case with Amazon. And this was a while ago too, but they had an early AI and they started reviewing their resumes and who's the best person to hire. Well, if you've been hiring a bunch of white guys, which probably have been, it's going to tell you that. You're going to see your bias in your hiring practices. So there's going to be a lot of reluctance to, because when HR professionals are seeing that, they're going to have to tune that out because, you know, if your data is biased,
right.
It's gonna be apparent. So you gotta try to, you know, I think that's gonna be tough to tune out. Is to say, no, you know, forget about some of this stuff in our past and evaluate, you know, fresh on these candidates.
Oh, I see what you're saying, right. It'll take the historicals, like your company's 97% white male, because of these hiring practices, right? Like
who's all in your leadership roles?
Yeah,
and it's going to say yeah. Those must be the best people to hire.
Yeah, no, that's very true. I could definitely see it being biased in that regard. I saw a meme made me laugh. It was showing we love DE&I, and it had the bottom row was all diverse, different people, different colors and shapes. And then as you went up the pyramid, because it was pyramid shape, it got less and less diverse.
Oh yeah,
it was like this is pretty much what our company's made out of. I was like, it's funny because it's true. And also, I think we talked about it on the show. I'm not sure if we did or not, but like in the past, they're working on just making models less biased because you have a group of one type of person who's building said product and tuning the AI where CVS was false reporting more people of color as shoplifters and things of that nature because it was fed a bunch of images of criminals and what have you, that were people like primarily people of color. It's not because people of color steal more, it's because they get caught more, right? There's more mugshots defeated than it was in any other model. So then it called out anyone who resembled a person of color and at all. It was like, you must be stealing from us. So there's like a lawsuit or something happening now because of it. It's just like, well, had you had more people of diversity within the room, maybe they would have said, well, maybe we shouldn't feed it, you know, a bajillion photos of people of color. Maybe we should make this a little bit more of a wider net.
Yeah, we had a case. We were reviewing this product, and I'll keep it very, very vague on what product, but we're looking at, and it was showing demographics of a county in rural North Carolina. And one of my project managers was African-American. No, immediately noticed this. Not a one of us did, but she was like, "My cousin lives in that county, and there's no black people on that demographics."
Right.
I know. There's more than
without a doubt.
yeah. And they're like, "Oh yeah, we didn't load that." Oh, and when they loaded, it was like 90% black.
Oh wow! Yes. So this is 180.
Oh yeah.
Correction. Oh wow! Okay,
but anyway, she was like, that's not right. You know, and it's a minor thing, but it's still a thing that no one else taught.
Right, right. And that goes into a lot of our conversation in the past, right? Like, and again, I'm going to put in description notes, but when we're talking about just the disparities where they bury waste or what area they drive,
yes.
You know, certain trucks and things of that nature, where they build farmland that has runoff, right? They put it in certain demographics. I'm glad you mentioned hog farms. You just jogged my memory. So there was something we talked about pre-show, and you were educating me on a term.
Oh,
it was butchering the pig?
Pig butchering.
So if you could kind of, I know it's a jolting term, right? But I definitely want to cover this on the show. If you can kind of break down what the definition is and why it's important.
So pig butchering, it's a scam. It's a scam to get money out of people. And the idea is to you fatten up the pig and then you do the final butchering. So we had talked about, you know, the technical controls for security are getting really, really good. They're really catching a lot of people. So we're seeing more BEC, business email compromise, just your traditional scamming. So this pig butchering is kind of like this thing with the twist on the romance thing, where you're building a relationship with someone, you're building trust. Most of the time it's romance. It could just be like a friendship, but it's all online. And at some point they're like, hey, I made a lot of money in this stock in this company, or, you know, if you're interested. And then of course they're like, I'm not sending you any money. He's like, no, don't send me any money. Here's this website. You can go look at it for yourself. And so they go and they create an account and they look around, and it's, you know, right. It's usually a financial product, and it shows, you know, really good gains. And then, you know, they put in a little bit of money, and it makes money for them, right? And then the person that they have the relationship with is just, you know, oh, yeah, I'm making so much money, too. Look at mine. And you get into this thing where you're building money, you're putting more money in, it's showing gains.
Right.
At some point, you're like, hey, you know, there's a quarterly fee or something, so you add a little bit more, but you're making so much money and no worries about it. And all of this is fabricated. The website's not real. The reports are not real. And then when you've made enough money, or the pig in this scenario, you like, oh, I've made enough money. I'm going to pull it out.
Right.
Then there's either a fee that you have to pay, or they're like, oh, here's, you got to pay taxes on this, before you can pull it out. And then if you do that, then there's no
money left.
There's no money yet. The gains are false. And it's just the last attempt to get every little bit of money out of you. So I don't know if I can say the podcast, but the Darknet Diaries has a podcast on pig butchering, which gives a couple of examples. And last week tonight, John Oliver, 2 weeks ago, had a special on pig butchering on this topic.
Gotcha. So I'm going to look for both. So yeah, I'm fine with you sharing whatever resources and names. If anything, I'm going to tag them in this anyway. So that way, hopefully, because they're bigger, right? So
yeah.
Hopefully you direct traffic my way. But no, I'm going to look into both, because I've never heard the term before. So when you said it, I was like, I don't know that one. And it's like you said, it's a twist on the romance, as well as like Bernie Madoff. What was that? That's a
pyramid scheme.
Pyramid scheme, right? Yeah, like I'm making money, you're making money, we're both making money, and yeah, you're just feeding me money, and the numbers are all false. That's I hate to always say I'm impressed, but I'm always impressed. Like criminals always impress me with this stuff, because like, who thought of this?
So the best one. This is off Darknet Diaries as well, right? So it's in India. The company's in India. It's huge, and they basically sell you degrees. Right. So, here, come to our degree. They make up the college. They make up the Facebook page, everything, right? And you basically pay for a degree and you get a degree. And there's deep into that. But here's the line. So you pay for the degree. And then they're like, you know, to get the certificate, it costs a couple $100 more. And then they'll like, after a while, they're like, hey, you know, this is a fake school. So, and they blackmail you, and pay us money, right? And then if you don't pay them money for the blackmail, and you're like, no, I'm out, I'm fully out. They're like, well, how about you work for us and flip you?
And it's like, just, yeah, you just pass it on.
They're
yeah.
just squeezing it every little bit, squeezing a little bit more. And I mean, I was impressed too. I was like, that's horrible for the person, but man, that is.
Right. And to sit there and think of the flow of it, right? It's just like any marketing campaign. It's like, okay, what do we do next? How do we flip this to make it more profitable? Like they're obviously criminals and it's illegitimate, but they have better business sense than some businesses, right? Like most businesses go out of business in the first 5 years. These people persist. They will always find a way to steal from people. It's crazy.
So this company, what they did was they hired their salespeople and they all knew what they were doing, but they'd have these ridiculous hours. But they would have, like, the article, the interview in Dark Knight Diaries is incredible. But, like, they did not pay these people a lot of money. But they're like, okay, I can't work today because my kid's sick. No problem. They would send someone to pick up their kid, take him to the doctor. They would pick up their wife, take her anywhere she wants to go. They would get your groceries for you. All of these sources. So all you're doing is you're just on that phone continually selling or creating Facebook profiles, creating the university profiles. So they were just working them to death, but they had this, they were keeping them employed because of all these, which I guess, assuming the math works in the bad guy's favor, but still.
Yeah. All the incentives with the hook.
Fascinating.
Yeah, because a larger company doesn't care that much. I mean, they quote unquote care about you, but they're not gonna like come to work. We pay you to do a job.
Yeah, they were using Google model where they want you to stay at work as much as possible. So they had all the catered stuff. But anyway, it was incredible. But the pig butchering, for it to be on John Oliver, I was like, ah. And we're starting to see, as we were talking about before, I'm just starting to see more and more scams come in because the filtering tools are not catching them all because they're not links, right? A lot of times they're just trying to start that conversation.
Oh, I see what you're saying, right? So just get a foot in the door. It's when I arrived to Turkey, sexting was a big thing. They were catching mostly males, but like officers, like enlist all the way up to officers, right? Like they start off with you ping the tower and then whomever figures it out and sends you a WhatsApp message, a text message, whatever, they can get to just high, just to generate that conversation. And these, I don't want to call them fools. You know, they're all young and experienced. They're in a foreign country. They're excited. They're single, ready to mingle. And then, now your nudes are all over the place and they're extorting money from you. So on the end of that extra money you're making in this tax-free combat exemption zone, all taken away.
It's unfortunate. I think you probably were in a job, but when I was in Germany, I was clearly in a job where we would get all of that information. So it wasn't as bad in Germany, but there would be a pirating was big, so the German government would go after the pirates. But we would get the names of the films that they were downloading and the names of the airmen, right? And it was one of the things I was happy to get out of the Air Force because I knew way too much about people's lives.
Oh, yeah. I guess. Right. I could definitely see that being like, you'll see him in the hallway like, oh, man.
Yeah, right? And I can't do anything. I'm like,
that's hilarious. But before I let you go, so last pivot, I like to always end the show with everything else, right? Movies, books, games, all that good stuff. What have you been consuming lately, or what would you like to share with the audience? Like maybe tell them, put them on, because you put me on to the Dungeons & Dragons movie, because I definitely was not going to watch that, but both you and Shannon were like, it's worth your time. So I watched it. It was like, this is hilarious. But yeah, are you playing any games? You watching any movies? You know, cardboards, video games, all that good stuff.
Okay.
So, reading the book, any of that stuff?
Well, I'm doing all of those. I'm in the science fiction book club. Probably not surprising, but The Fourth Wing, I'm reading now. And lots of action. I mean, one of the things we've talked about in our book club is it's like a premise of like you got a Harry Potter, somewhat kind of Hunger Games, but when you put in a learning environment, so you as a reader, you're learning the environment as they are learning the environment. And so this is a Dragon Riders, and super exciting. But that's what I'm reading now. For games, it's, you know, I played Diablo 4 for about 2 months, and then I started playing Baldur's Gate 3, and I haven't stopped playing Baldur's Gate 3.
I hear it's amazing. I just don't have the 100 hours plus.
I mean,
Well, you know, here's, it's amazing.
As you talk about mainlining, you can mainline it fairly quickly, but okay. I'm not. I am a do everything I can possibly do. And so, and I'm on my second playthrough. Like I knew the first, when I was playing it, I was in Act 2 and I was like, I'm going to play this game. I
gotcha.
So that's what I've been, and I play that, I try to play that an hour a night, and you know, I usually get a couple hours on the weekend or more.
Okay.
And then, I think I've been watching some mediocre stuff. I kind of like the Marvels. I didn't think it was fantastic.
It wasn't bad. I don't know what it was missing.
It was,
I'll
right,
be honest with you.
It was okay. I think the humor's good. Action's good. It wasn't groundbreaking, but I think the Avengers Infinity War, it just ruined everything.
I agree.
I don't think you can have a good Marvel movie now because you don't have the arc without, you know, without the Kang.
I don't know how they're going to recover from that. Like what, where do they pivot? Because they set up so, like, even though they're in phase 5 now, phase 4 was kind of just all over the place, but it started to build, right? You started to say, okay, now we see who the big bad is. He's going to be in a million different forms. And now, obviously, that's been taken out of their hands due to his conduct. So, like, no, it's not Disney's fault.
But I got to tell you, any time that I saw him on screen, I was riveted. The Ant-Man movie, don't know what else happened in that movie, but when I see him on the screen,
right,
I was like, wow.
It took him 40 minutes to get there, but yeah, when he was on the screen.
And then Loki, I don't know.
Yeah.
And I mean, like, he's such a good actor. And I was like, this is really weird. It's nothing like the Ant-Man one, but I mean, I do a pretty good job of separating the artist from the arch.
Right. So you're like, Shannon. So in that case, I would say if you still want to consume some of his content, Lovecraft Country. I don't know if you've seen it on HBO.
I know what it is, but I haven't seen it. No.
It's actually really good. Only one season. I'm not going to spoil it for you, but it actually does conclude. Like it could have been like, okay, we want a second season. We can do that, or this could be the end. It was the end. So it's worth watching. Like, I hate when things don't conclude. I'm not even going to start it because I want to see an ending. This one actually does have a conclusion, which could have been another season also. So I would push you in that direction. And obviously Creed and all that other stuff. But I have an issue with separating artists from their art. It's a little bit easier with actors because they're already playing a character, right? I don't know who that person is. But when it comes to like musicians and stuff like that, I can't listen to like R. Kelly anymore, right? You took that from me. These classic albums, they're gone. I'm still on the fence about Michael Jackson. I don't want the show to get canceled, so I'm not going to go too deep into that.
I changed the channel the other day when it came on. Michael Jackson's song came on. But I can't completely boycott it. It's tough. But yeah, so I did like the Marvels, but I think it's missing that overall arc to really tie
it. Yeah, I think if it had a big bad, because in the first arc, they always pointed back to Thanos. Everything pointed back to Thanos. You always knew that it's going to come to a head. It took like, what was that, a decade?
Yeah.
But you didn't mind because you're like, it's building. These past two phases, I have no clue. Like, we thought it was Kang. It's not Kang anymore. So it's just kind of like, I guess I have to enjoy them for what they are, but I don't want to enjoy them for what they are. I want that build. They spoiled me.
It's also like, can there ever be another Star Wars? You can have more Star Wars, but can you ever replicate that initial?
Right.
Like you didn't have a laser sword or spaceships like that. Not in that form.
Right.
Can you experience another Matrix? You know?
Like, no, I don't know. I don't like, there are certain one-offs. Like you said, like the Matrix, Star Wars, the MCU, At least the beginning of it.
The whole run on Thanos. Like, for a while, you didn't even know it. You were just watching the movies, like, cool. Comic book movies come to life. Well done. And then you're like, wow, there's a theme here. Every time you go, right, the end credits and all this, there's these things that you're learning and you're part of it. Like, I'm living this moment. And you, And we did, and it was fantastic. The billions of dollars they made. And now you're like, okay, more. And they're like, well, that's kind of all we got.
Yeah.
Or it's more of the same, so it's just not going to live up to.
Right. And I think it's a lot of, I think it's where we're at. It's not our fault per se, but we experienced it. It was a decade, a phase of our lives, and now we've kind of moved on, which is sad because, I don't know what's around the corner. It's going to be something though. There's always something new. There's always someone will create something where I'm like, man, that's epic. It's not going to be Dune. I do enjoy Dune, but I don't think it's going to be Dune. Like, everybody's really hyped upon it. I haven't seen the second one yet. I did see the first one. And it did have that build up. So I expect the second one to be all action, right?
But, a lot of people think that's one of the greatest science fiction books ever written. They believe that Star Wars is a ripoff of Dune in a lot of ways. But they also, most people have said, you can't. It's unfilmable. So how can you capture all the books? Like, I would have said that with Game of Thrones, but I would have been wrong, except towards the end of the season. And then it was just I think you were talking about on this podcast, it just got rushed. You're like, why? You were doing so good.
Right. There had to be something. Like, yes, I think it was me and Chris, because Shannon's not watching it. He got to the Red Wedding, and he was like, I'm done. But me and Chris were saying, like, you did so well until season 7, and it feels as though something invisible to us was like, hurry up and wrap this up. But you didn't have to.
No, you had us every Sunday, glued. Like, coming on.
Yeah.
I do want to say, absolutely, I watched this a couple months ago, but Blue Eyed Samurai is just, I can't say enough about that. I really enjoyed it. It's like, it came on, I'm like, oh, look, Disney level art. And then people die. And it's really adult, really fast.
Very gruesome ways, yeah. Shannon put me on that one, actually. He asked me if I watched it, and I was like, no, I saw the thumbnail, but I didn't even, like, you know how you scroll too long on Netflix, and it starts to play? I didn't even do that. I just skipped right past it. But yeah, I was pleasantly surprised. That one was really good. He tried to put me onto another one, Onimusha. I don't know if it is a game, but he said he watched the cartoon or anime or whatever debate we're currently having. I would say cartoon, he probably would say anime, but he watched it and he really enjoyed it. He has no context for it, right? He'd never played any of the game. So if he liked it, I'd probably love it.
I think you would. I actually know it because he wrote the Book of Five Rings. It's kind of like The Art of War, but it's thinner.
Okay.
But gotcha. But he's a real life person, and the story's really cool. Okay. So I didn't even know it was a video game until I started looking at it, because I knew him as the philosopher book writer. I think he's got two books.
I just learned something new. I did not even know that, because I guess maybe if it was in the game, I didn't pick up on it, but I doubt it was in the game. I think they just probably stole some lore and decided to make a game out of it.
Probably. I mean, there's a famous story which is kind of depicted in the animated series.
Okay.
Is that where him and this other dude have been like going around trying to get in a fight for a while, and Miyashu rows with a canoe to an island to meet him, and the guy like jumps up and starts yelling at him like, "Oh, you're so late!" And he just jumps up and whacks him over the head, samurai style, with the oar. Kills him and he gets back in the canoe and goes back. Just man, it's much more detailed story.
Right.
But that's the concept of there's this like you waste your time with all this flowery swordplay. Just go
right.
Anyway,
get it over with.
That's how you. That's boring. You can cut that if you want. That's
no. I'm gonna keep all that. I'm definitely gonna check it out. It's on my list, right? So I've started to make a list of things I need to catch up on. I just really like I was telling Shannon and Chris and Alan Wesley, actually, I think I talked to him about it on the show. That'll come out before this one debuts, because it's how time works. All this time I saved by utilizing ChatGPT to offload a lot of the things I found to be mundane or monotonous or time consuming, I filled with more stuff. As I learn more stuff, I'm like, oh, I could do this. Oh, I could do that. Oh, I can add us to YouTube. So I've actually started to spend more time in my time-saving effort. But I think it's going to benefit us in the long run. Like 2024, I'm going full speed ahead. I think it's time for me to really level up the podcast. Like, I already have great guests like yourself. I already have great co-hosts. But I do not spend any time on production. So that's my goal for this year, is to actually do some production, which I hate. But ChatGPT has been helping me out tremendously.
Yeah.
It makes it fun.
Yeah. I think you can equate that to what it could do with every other business and every, you know, I like in the state, right. I'm not going to get rid of positions. They'll just do something different.
Right.
They'll do
right.
more. But yeah, so I think that's cool. And what I try to promote, I'm in an internship program at work. And so this gentleman wants to get into cybersecurity. So maybe he'll listen to this episode because I recommend this episode. I basically say, listen to some podcasts. If you're not enjoying the podcast, then maybe you don't want to be in this field.
Gotcha. Right. Yeah, no, I think that's spot on. To push them towards GRC, that's like, tell them it's the most boring, interesting, well-paying job. It's cyber. Like, you do something sexy like pen testing, all that other stuff. I can't vouch for that. That's not my wheelhouse, but I really enjoy the GRC space. It's doing nothing but expanding, right, with regulation and what have you. To understand this trade, I believe will last you a long time.
Yeah.
Just because there's always a new regulation, there's always a new policy, or a 2.0 or a 3.0. It's always progressing, right? So I think you'll be safer in this space. If you can, you know, be fine with a lot of reading, a lot of listening.
As long as there's a government, there's going to be a regulation to follow.
That's very true.
People to write it and then be experts on it.
Yeah, no, and that's a great analogy. It's like my kids are on the medical side of the house. So say you always have a job. There will always be sick people. So yeah, I like that. Yeah, there will always be a job in GRC because there always will be a government. If there isn't, then we have another problem.
Yep.
So, but thank you for your time. I greatly appreciate it. Like I know I went over what I said we would go over, but I think it's all really good content, especially to share it with people who are, you know, on their cybersecurity journey, or they're, you know, trying to help out those who are on their journey. I think we cover pretty much all the bases. And it's good to learn more about your background, your history, because you're definitely, you know, a friend of the show, an ally, and we want to get you on here more often, you know, when you have the time. Busy guy. But definitely continue. So I'm gonna land a plane, right? So definitely continue to watch the podcast, listen to it. You can find us everywhere now, pretty much. YouTube is doing really great numbers for us. So if you're a YouTube person, please continue to subscribe, like, share, hit a bell. There's a bell involved, all that good stuff. You can find us at all the social medias that go by our name, either Ask AssistP or the other side of the FW on most platforms. You can find me personally at RyRy Security Guy. That's RyRy Security Guy. You can find me on Instagram, LinkedIn, Twitter, Threads, Instagram, LinkedIn. So all the places, just type in RyRy Security Guy. And where can they find you, Mike?
I don't know all my handles, but you can find me on LinkedIn and Twitter. I believe Mike
there it is.
45.
Yes. And I'll put it all in the description so people can track you down if they have any questions or what have you. But again, it's been a pleasure. Please continue to like, share, subscribe again, and stay safe. Stay secure.